you don't have to vote, but I do like that. I'm stunned that you could remember what I spoke about, because I remember the topic, but I have no clue what I said. So I'm kind of like the congregation. We read it and weep, and you go on, right? So today, I want to ask you to join me in a trip in the life of Jesus that really looks at an issue that's remarkably important. It's called resilience. How many of you have ever seen this or been to this? What is it? The Arch. Where is it? St. Louis. Very interesting building. I'm going to talk about resilience. I think of the Arch because of this. Don't know if you know it, but that thing moves. In fact, in wind of 50 miles an hour, it'll move 6 inches. In 150 miles an hour, it will move 18 inches. Why would they do that? If it doesn't bend, it doesn't stand. A tornado will knock that thing down if they didn't put resilience in it. What is the definition of resilience? It is this: the capacity to bend and bounce back to the prior shape and strength. It'll bend, but if it bends within that parameter, it's fine, because it's designed to bend. I'm just wanting you to understand that what we're talking about today is our personal capacity for resilience, to bend and come back. So I'm going to ask you to join with me, if you will, in finding John chapter 12. While you're doing that, let me tell you just a little more about the Arch. Built in 2 years, 1963 to 65, it goes 60 feet into the ground and 30 feet into bedrock, which is solid rock. It's shaped to be standing on something that's very, very firm. Remarkable architecture and a model of tensile strength. It's designed to withstand a tornado. And it's very funky. It's very strange how you get up there. You either walk up all the stairs or you get in a little cart and notice the shape. What do you notice about it? It's curved. It doesn't go straight up. It goes up and it tilts. Goes up and tilts. If you're a little anxious like I was, every time it tilted, I thought, we're falling. But we were moving only this much, but it didn't feel like it, right? The reason we're going to be talking about that is, in my mind, it's important to understand two things about resilience, that it involves a lifestyle, it involves a spiritual grounding. So, resilience is the capacity to bend and come back, to cope with things that are difficult. So I'm reading in John chapter 12, and I'm going to ask you to notice with me the remarkable contrast that happens in these 19 verses between what's really incredible and powerful and what's difficult and challenging, all in the same time. Think about that. Life rarely is one or the other. It's usually both at the same time. The capacity to bend. This is the last week of Jesus' life. He's already raised Lazarus from the dead, and it's anointed for his burial. It's the last week of before Passover. Jesus arrived at Bethany, where Lazarus lived. Wasn't dead anymore. He lived. Whom Jesus had raised from the dead. Notice the contrast. Dead, life. Here, a dinner was given in his honor. Martha served while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with him. Then Mary took a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair. I read that and I get a little uncomfortable. Think about that. Here's my lovely wife right here, Judy Lynn. We've been married 52 years. I can't imagine her bending over and washing my feet with her hair. That I wouldn't ever ask it or expect it. But this is happening publicly. This woman is so in love with Christ that she's literally willing to honor him by cleaning his feet with her hair. That's an interesting contrast. Read the next thing that happens, because this is going to go back and forth through the whole text. The house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But, contrast, but one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray him, objected. Hey, moron, what are you doing? Why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? Doesn't that sound like an admirable thing to do, to take care of the poor? Notice the contrast. It was worth a year's wages. I don't know about you, but that's some nice perfume. He didn't notice this edited comment by John, the writer. He didn't say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. Thief as one of the inner circle in Jesus' life and ministry. He used to help himself to what was put into it. Less than a week away from Jesus' life. Leave her alone, Jesus replied. It was intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial. Notice that this thing keeps going back and forth between what's incredible, what's powerful, what's desirable, and what's painful and damaging and sinful. Resilience, the ability to bend and come back. Meanwhile, a large crowd of Jews found out that Jesus was there and came not only because of him, but also to see the guy that used to be dead. That's a pretty interesting day. Lazarus, whom he had raised from the dead. So the chief priest made plans to kill Lazarus as well. For on account of him, many of the Jews were going over to Jesus and putting their faith in him. I read this and I feel like I'm going up this arch. Tilt, tilt, tilt. I'm going up, but it keeps falling down. The reason I'm bringing this up is I think this is typical of our life. There are incredibly good things and incredibly hard things. The really important thing for us to begin to understand is how we live in that space determines the nature of our faith and the quality of our lives. So that's why I'm talking about resilience, the capacity to bend and come back. I want to answer four questions. Number one, why do we struggle with setbacks and suffering so much? Why is it so hard? One, life is painful. It's traumatic. It's confusing. It involves death. It involves questions. It involves sin. It involves confusion. Why do we struggle? Because we're human and we're limited. We have our own limitations, our own challenges. Three, because past trauma can trigger current trauma. So I stand before you today with a new leg. I had a knee replaced 3 months ago. My son is a doctor, and after the surgery, he said, Dad, I think they threw the old one out. You got a new one now. The problem is I didn't ask enough questions. I didn't know that this leg wouldn't know how to walk. Did you know that? I thought you put one in, you took one out, you put one in, you walk. No, this leg is getting to learn how to walk. Slowly. Slowly. I can feel it. I can feel this thing right there that is still learning to walk. I can't walk as fast. I can't run. I can't play games I used to play as easily because I'm in the transition between then and now. Resilience, the capacity to bend and come back to the prior shape and strength. I'm still learning something that I didn't know. So life is like that. We have to keep learning what's difficult. Second question, what does the research say about strategies to forge resilience? There's a lot of research on anxiety, depression, and how to cope with that, and I'd like to talk a little bit about that. Here's the statement. Healthy lifestyles help forge personal resilience. Resilience is the outcome of behaviors, not the cause. Healthy lifestyles help forge personal resilience. What I'm going to do today is connect two pieces, what the research says about how to live resiliently, but secondly, what does Jesus mean in our own spiritual formation that connects with that in a meaningful way? So, this is called seeds. Can everybody say seeds with me? Seeds. Let's try that one again. Seeds. Let's try one more time. Seeds. Very good. I like that. See, we're working together now. S, social support. 2, exercise. 3, education. 4, diet. 5 is sleep. All of these are at minimal levels, but without them, we will not be very resilient. They co-influence each other. In fact, if we're doing all 5 of these consistently, they're restorative of health and preventative of illness. How we live influences our personal resilience. And they involve 3 things. Physically, our bodies, our brain, and our relationships. Say them with me. Relational, body, brain. Again, relational, body, brain. God's created us this way, to be integrated, to be whole. So, social support. It's the greatest predictor of post-operative surgery. If I have a major surgery, one of the things that will determine my recovery is there a social network in my life when I'm done? If I'm in that bed by myself and I go home by myself, I'm much less likely to recover and certainly not as fast. We're social. 2, mutual. Social support is something we do together. It's qualitative and quantitative. It's more important to have fewer but close friends than 60 you hardly know. Quality relationships matter. And let me describe it to you. It means that we're close enough we can actually have physical contact. This is why Zoom and I are not the best of buddies. I can't touch you. I can't see you. I can't be near you. Social relationships that are powerful are the same ones that Jesus had in chapter 12. Lazarus, Mary, Martha, Judas Iscariot, all of them close to him in the same place at the same time. Physical contact, appropriate physical contact. 2, emotionally invested. If I have no commitment to you and you're detached from me, our relationship will have very little capacity to help either of us. So having a lot of friends that you barely know, wonderful. You can say hi at high school, greet them on the street in Crete. Hey, go Huskers. That's about as far as it's going to go. It has no positive benefit on your emotional well-being. Because it's not close. I'm interested in the last week of Jesus' life, the word 3 occurs multiple times. The 3 disciples he took with him to pray. They're always the same people. I read that, I go, well, what about the other guys? What was wrong with them? I don't know, but all I know is Jesus said that those 3 men were going to be a part of his life and were with him in the most difficult part of his life. Physical touch, emotional, and guess what? They're honest. Jesus, in this last sections of John, says multiple times, all of you are going to leave me. You're going to abandon me. No, we're not going to do it. Yeah, you are. I'm telling you the truth. This is what's going to happen. And when I rise, we'll connect again. Quality relationships are really critical because it's how he made us. He looked at Adam and said, I don't think that's good enough. And all the women here said, amen. Come on, be honest about it. Let's be frank. Quality, physical contact, emotionally invested, and verbally honest. We actually express care. We express concern. We deal with the beefs. How we do relationships matter. S, social support. What's your network? I saw Dana yesterday. I said Mike yesterday. These are guys I've known for 30 years and lived and loved. Social support. E, exercise. 30 minutes of rapid walking 3 times a week. Would everybody stand with me, please? Come on. You didn't walk in here to go to sleep, I hope. 30 minutes, rapid walking 3 times a week. Kicks up as much serotonin as antidepressants. If you're depressed, maybe you need to start walking. Here we go. You're walking. Just stand there. You can do it. Walk. You're not walking. No one's walking. Start walking. It's not fast enough. Rapid walking looks like this. Come on, let's go. Pick it up. 30 minutes, rapid walking. How many times? 3 a week. Kicks up as much serotonin as antidepressants. So if we're sluggish, we need to start moving. Notice the integration, social and physical. Thank you. If you're not doing it, start. This is why my wife has got me out at the mall in Lincoln doing this stuff. For my knee, but also because if I don't move, I'm dying. Biochemically, I'm not doing well because there's a connection between emotional health and physical. Rapid walking 3 times a week. It creates thyroxine. It makes me feel energized. It increases my brain function. Think about that. I can walk and my brain gets smarter. I'm for it. 30 minutes, rapid walking 3 times a week is really important. Third one is E, education. Can you say that with me? Education. Social, physical education. Listen to this. Learn anything new, and your brain starts working again. See, it's an incredible thing. If I put my car on outside and I turn it on and I don't drive it, that's not how it's made. It's made to run, not to just... That's your brain. If you don't give it anything new to learn, it just goes, yeah, bored. I'm not doing anything and I'm not learning anything. Learn anything new, and your brain starts working again. Diet, food fuels the brain. Stress depletes vitamins B, C, potassium, increases cholesterol. High sugar levels. Anybody like sugar like me? Be honest. Contribute to anxiety and depression because we elevate and crash. Elevate and crash. More than 3 cups of coffee or energy drink is a clinically stressful neurochemical condition. How much do you drink? How many Cokes a day? How many days a week? Are you tracking with me? What we do with our body has a massive influence on our well-being. So the last one is sleep. Oh, by the way, anybody like to eat fish? Come on, admit it. Oh, I bless you, my children. Good for you. You're supposed to eat a lot more. That's all I can say. Sleep deprivation. If you're not sleeping well, cortisol and glucose go up. And it evokes emotional reactions and negative thoughts. You need 5 hours minimum a day. 7 hours maximum. Or the brain starts dying. The brain renews at a cellular level during sleep. Can I give you 3 suggestions? Number one, sleep in a quiet, dark, cool room. Got it? Small, quiet, dark, cool. Two, no physical exercise or media. Everybody get out your phone. I know you've got them. Phones, come on. None of that an hour before you go to bed. No exercise, no phones, no social media. Because what you're telling your brain is, you can't go to sleep yet. One hour. It's amazing how quiet your mind will get if you quit charging it up. Social support, education, seeds. Say it again. Seeds. Social support. What's the second one? Exercise. Then what? Education, diet, and sleep. These are lifestyle choices that we all get to make that directly impact our physical and emotional world. How are you doing? You don't have to answer me, but it's okay if you do. I'm simply suggesting that resilience is correlated with the lifestyle we choose, and frankly, in our culture, the model isn't a good one. More stuff, more activity, more stimulation, less exercise, and we're so busy we don't have time to get together with our friends. This is not a good process. Very much not Jesus. Close friends, close connection, exercise. They weren't biking everywhere. They walked everywhere they went. They didn't get in the car, woof, across town. Everywhere they went, they walked. They ate better foods. They weren't eating runzas every third day, though they're good. So, first key point is how we live really affects us. The last one is this. What does the Bible tell us about how Jesus faced his suffering, his death, his struggle? I'm going to suggest he did it with awareness and anticipation. He knew it was coming and prepared for it. He did it with his closest friends near him, physically and emotionally. He didn't do it alone. I think that says something. I don't know about you, but if the Son of God needs support, maybe we do. I mean, who are we kidding? This is who we're created to be. This is what I do find out. Did you know that women use three times words more words than men? Thanks be to God. I'm with guys all the time, and what about those Huskers? And it's like, hello, is there anything else? How are you? What's working? How can I pray for you? What are you excited about? What are the concerns that you have? Can we take time to pray together? Those aren't questions that always get very frequently asked. And consequently, we're more isolated. Closest friends in prayer with him, with an absolute reliance on the Spirit. John is one of the most personal of the Gospels. And all the sections I've noted talk about his reliance on the Spirit and his sense of mission. I don't know what you think you're here for in the world, but I can tell you, it's this, to know him and make him known. Are you hearing me? There is no other reason to create humanity than to know him and make him known. The rest of the stuff is secondary. What did he do? He anticipated and was aware, took his friends with him, prayed for himself, his friends, and everybody else, and relied on the Spirit with a sensed mission. Last question, how did Jesus tell his disciples to cope? Just like he did, honestly, with himself, with the Father, and with his best friends. In community, not alone. We weren't designed to do it well alone. Reliance on the Spirit. I don't know about you, but I don't think I do a very good job transforming myself spiritually. Do Do you? I don't have that capacity. If there's ever transformation, it's I'm actively collaborating with what the Spirit is already doing. He's transforming me, not me. I'm simply collaborating with the work he's doing. This utter reliance on the Spirit is a critical piece. And realism. Hard things happen, and they're to be expected. Hard things happen, and so we shouldn't be stunned when they do happen. But he knows about that because he's done it. And he anticipates, I'm interested in this, John 14. By the way, there's suffering ahead for you. Remain in me. My Spirit will be with you, and we win. Jesus is going to return, folks, and that changes everything. His return changes the course of the whole cosmos because he's going to reestablish his lordship. So I'm really saying integration, my own lifestyle with a dynamic walk with him, will enable us to walk wisdom with the ability to bend and come back. To bend and come back. To endure what's difficult and grow is what isn't. I don't know if you know it, but depression levels are increasing in this country. Did you know that? Anxiety is up. I wonder why. Because there's so much we're concerned about, and we're not living very wisely either. No surprise. So, what's the thesis? Resilience is the capacity to bounce back. How I live and my walk with God shape that in a very powerful way. I want to just tell you one story, and that I'd like to close and pray and invite you for prayer, actually. I don't know about you, but one of the most traumatic things in my life has been health issues in my family that ended in death. We got married when I was in college. We were pregnant in college, and my mom contracted cancer and died at age 47, 1 month before our first child was born. Saw her at my college graduation, sitting in that part of the building in a wheelchair. I walked into the building past her and walked out past her, and she died in a week. Never knew any of our kids. And they didn't get to know her. That's still painful to me. That's still sad to me. My dad remarried. She's an incredible woman. In fact, we're going this summer to celebrate her 100th birthday. But I got to tell you, some things shape you forever. And God's still present in that stuff. There will be things that are difficult, and how we deal with them is what matters. How are you doing? Can we stand one more time? We're going to do it together. S, first S is what? Social support. Second is what? Exercise. Third, education. Four, diet, sleep. I'm teaching my new knee. It's teaching me. I'm learning. But what I know the most is this. In the middle of whatever you're facing, God cares about that. Are you wise enough to invite others into that with you? Are you doing solo? Solo work. Do you think it's your job to change you? I think it's our job to collaborate. So I'm going to ask those that are going to be able to pray with you today to come forward. And I'm just going to give you the opportunity to have someone pray with you. And I would be glad to pray with you. Lord, we bless you because you're worthy.